Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. This week we talk about the quote biggest mistake ever and rate the chances of Kubica's comeback. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 47 of the Fastest Lap podcast, and today you can expect a pretty controversial episode because we will talk about the halo. The FIA decided to introduce it for next season, and well, the quote from the introduction was from Niki Lauda. But before we start, I'm interested in your opinion as well. Let us know via YouTube, Twitter at FLF1Podcast or fastslappodcast@gmail.com. What do you think about the halo? And, well, yes, swear words are allowed. Okay, Fergal, you talked about an overreaction. Explain.
I do think it's an overreaction. I mean, I understand that I'm in the minority here because I support the introduction of the halo, and yeah, I know that there's not a lot of people that agree with me.
The podcast is over. From next week onwards, there will be only me. You're gone.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Whatever. I understand why there's such a big backlash over it, but I mean, for the most part, I support it. I think 2018 is probably a bit too soon, but at the end of the day, I do think there was an overreaction from quite a few people that I've seen were saying that they were done with F1, they'd never watch F1 again, it's ruining the sport, and I don't really understand that, because in my opinion...
Well, it is ruining the sport a bit.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, they're the exact same cars. They have the exact same potential to go wheel to wheel and the exact same potential to give us exciting races. I mean, sure, aesthetically, they mightn't look as good, but, I mean, we put up with the 2014 cars, which were absolutely hideous, just for example. But, I mean, in my opinion, they're the same cars at the end of the day, and it's not going to take away any excitement from the sport, I don't think. Well, in terms of racing.
What's the ugliest car you know?
From 2000.
No, generally.
I don't know. There was a Ligier in the 70s. I think it was that was really ugly. I can't remember the name of it.
And imagine all cars would look like that, and they would not necessarily, we'll talk about that of course as well, that would not necessarily lead to a safer sport, and all cars would be ugly as hell, and well, of course they would race wheel to wheel, blah blah blah. Would you still support it?
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, your argument is that it makes the sport safer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, again, it makes it safer, but it doesn't make it safe. I mean, for as long as there's drivers inside the cockpit of a racing car, it's going to be dangerous, no matter what kind of safety features are in there. I mean, from 1994 to up to now, I mean, we've considered the cars so much safer, and even before the Imola weekend of 1994, where Roland Ratzenberger and Ayrton Senna lost their lives, up to that point, F1 was considered considerably safe. And I think as time has progressed, we've put aside these potential for dangers and these just unnecessary risks. And I mean, I do get the argument that Formula One should be an open cockpit formula, yes. But and I do understand that because that's what it's always been, but like I said, I think that it's not going to change anything for the way that these cars race, which is what I watch F1 for. I don't watch F1 cars just to see how they look out on track. I mean, of course, that's a bonus.
I mean, that's one part. That's a big part of it.
Would you rather have really, really nice looking cars that you know, can't even race and don't even bring any element of excitement, or would you be able to watch a race with somewhat uglier cars but get a real thrill from wheel-to-wheel action and great racing?
Well, that's the point. I mean, we've lost so many things that added to the spectacle. I mean, you can't expect to have an awesome race every two races or something, you know. Those really great races, they come like maybe once a season or something. We had like Brazil 2016, for example. And for those other races, maybe you really have got really boring races, and then you need something else. I mean, we lost the sound already, and now they taking away some of the key elements, as you said, with the open cockpit. And I don't really think it's the right way in terms of the package, and yeah, for as a whole in terms of the popularity of Formula One. And I don't even think that it makes the sport much safer, even safer, because I mean, I read an article, I think it was even from Will Buxton, who said that the FIA calculated that the halo would only, or that the halo is only useful in 23% of possible impacts or something, and 23% is not that much. I mean, we know that it will, it might only deflect like big objects or something. But on the other hand, I mean, 23%, I would like to know how many risks the halo brings with it. I mean, can drivers escape the car as quickly as they could before? What other possible consequences could that have? You know, the whole package is not, it doesn't fit to Formula One, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, drivers escaping from the car in an emergency, that's not a problem. The FAA have tested that, and they've concluded that a driver will be able to get out of a car, even if it's, you know, overturned within the allocated time. But I read that the FIA conducted a lot of tests. I mean, like, I think it was something like 700,000 or 800,000 tests, and there was an overwhelmingly positive effect from the halo in place. And it just, I mean, there's also the issue, the liability issue that could lead to legal problems. I mean, if the FIA have come up with this concept that's worked, that protects the driver even further, and then a driver is killed or injured in an accident, and the FIA refused to bring this head protection system in because of how the cars because how they look different, that's gonna bring a lot of legal issues and a lot of moral issues, I think, as well. So I think at the end of the day, what it really boils down to is, you know, we don't want to see deaths again in F1. You know, the Jules Bianchi accident, granted, halo,
but you can't even guarantee that with that halo.
You can't guarantee it, but I mean, it just makes it so much safer. And what I was saying before, the accident with Jules Bianchi, the halo probably, I don't think, would have saved him in that incident anyway. But I mean, for example, in IndyCar, for Justin Wilson, who died, I think only like a month after Jules Bianchi died, his accident in IndyCar, it was tested that the halo had a positive effect on that incident. And Justin Wilson, if the halo were in place back then, he still could be with us, today. So,
we're talking about Formula One at the moment.
We're talking about Formula One, but I mean, if it's going to be introduced in Formula One, it's got to be introduced in junior categories. There's no point having it in just Formula One, and especially in IndyCar, where, for example, the straight line speeds are pretty similar to F1. I don't think it's a fair argument to say what has happened. Should the halo have protected them back then? Because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how we can prevent these things happening again in the future. I said at the start of the podcast. I think 2018 is a bit too quick. I mean, I think there hasn't been much running. The drivers haven't had much running at all, but I think the ones that did run with it last year, I think there was all but one driver ran with it last year. I think it was a Hamilton. I think it might have been the only driver that didn't run with it. I'm not sure. But I think...
No idea.
Yeah. I read that one driver anyway hadn't run with it last year. I think it was Hamilton, but that might not be true.
Well, he has a history of one driver not being there or not testing something.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. No, he has to be different. a thing that many people have been saying is, will the driver be able to see out of the cockpit? And I think, yeah, they all said that it didn't obstruct their view at all.
In my opinion, I tested it in the R Factor simulator, so I installed a mod with the Halo, and even I had to say after driving it, it's not a big problem, you know. After two laps or so, you don't even really notice it anymore. So in terms of visibility, I don't think it's a big issue.
Yeah, which is probably the biggest issue of all, I think. I mean, if the drivers aren't actually able to see out of the cockpit, I mean, it's safer to probably not have it there. I don't think you can justify really the fact that, you know, if a death happens, then, you know, you can still say, well, head protection still shouldn't be in Formula One. And, you know, that hasn't happened in F1 yet in the modern era, because, like I said, the accident with Bianchi, the Halo, wouldn't have saved him. But I don't want to wake up one day and hear that a driver has been killed from an accident in a race where the Halo could have protected him. And I think if that eventually did happen, and I know I'm basing a lot of this off ifs, but that's what the argument is, you know, that's what it's been put in place for. If an accident happens again, the driver will be protected. So I don't want to hear that a driver's been killed when he could have been potentially saved.
I mean, we're talking about the last, like, 0.01% or something, where, yeah, something could happen. As you said, we are talking in possibilities, and there's so many more risks drivers take. I mean, even taking a ride on a bike or something is way more expensive than dangerous. That's what I wanted to say. Way more dangerous than driving a Formula One car today. And I really don't get why they destroy. I mean, they're destroying the show a bit. You can't argue with that. They're destroying the show for the viewers because the cars will look uglier. I mean, if they would come up with a head protection, or I wouldn't even complain if they went for a full closed cockpit. I mean, we saw like really nice concepts, but somehow integrated with the design of the car. But this solution, it just looks like a flip-flop, you know? It's like so ugly, and I can't really justify putting that ugly thing on it, on that car, with like reducing the risk by 0.0001% or something.
But if it works best in the other concepts, I mean, shouldn't that be enough rather than what it looks like? I mean,
then you have to ask whether it's necessary at all. As I said, there are so many other things in life that are way more dangerous than driving a Formula One car these days.
Yeah, if you're fit enough.
Then you had to say, like, oh, you shouldn't drive with your car to work because there are so many deaths on roads every day. So it's way too unsafe. We need to build way stronger cars and these and that and whatever.
Well,
you can't eliminate risks. You just can't. I mean, that's why they called risks.
Well, I don't think you can really compare driving a road car, the dangers of driving a road car, to the dangers of F1. But I mean, you said there before about how it's stealing the show. In what way? I mean, aesthetically?
Yeah.
But in my opinion, that's not really a major issue. I mean, again, what I said was before, we're still going to get the same cars. We're still going to get the drivers pushing to the absolute limit, like they have been up to now. And all we're getting in return is knowing that the cars are a bit safer, and that if something does come flying at the cockpit, that there is a increased chance that the driver will walk away from the accident. Yeah, and we're still going to get the same show, the same excitement, with just an added element of safety. And in my opinion, it just doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. And I think by the time they're introduced, and after pre-season testing, I think a lot of people will start to have gotten used to them, because they're just used to seeing them on the car. They mightn't like them, but they're just used to them. Maybe a bit like the engine sound. I mean, I got used to the sound pretty quickly. I didn't like it, but I got used to it, and I think that's what's going to happen with F1. But yeah, I think it's head protection has been a talking point for quite a while now, and if the halo is seen as the best option for now, then I mean, let it be brought in. I don't think it's probably not going to be the long term solution, because, well, yeah, I mean, the guys at the top must know that it doesn't look great, and this
looks absolute
I don't even think it looks as bad as people say it is. I mean, it doesn't look great, obviously.
It does. I mean, we saw some renders that looked like quite okay-ish. Like, I don't know, I think it was a Mercedes car with some kind of it looked more edgy, halo system. But that's not what we are getting, I think. I think we are getting that, in kind of a round shape that looks like a flip-flop. As I said, it's not looking good at all.
No, it doesn't look great. I mean, granted, like, the cars look better without them, but I don't think they look horribly. I don't think they look, like, atrocious.
I think they look horribly.
Yeah, well, we're never really two people to agree on the same thing.
Sometimes we do.
Yeah, rarely. I've lost what I was talking about, but I think at the end of the day, the FIA did a lot of testing, and they pushed a lot of incidents that happened throughout the years. I mean, for example, there was the incident in 2007 with Wurz over the top of Coulthard, Luizzi coming up on Schumacher in Abu Dhabi in 2010, Grosjean on Alonso at Belgium. There's a few different incidents, and even actually I read there was an incident in Marco Campos, who died at Manicourt in Formula 3000 back in 1995. I think I read they did a test on that and proved that tested positive, that the halo would have had a positive effect in that incident. It's all just one big circle, in my opinion, that it just comes back to driver safety, and that sure, in the short term, we'll probably have the halo for the next few years, but I think,
oh my word,
I think in the long run we'll have something different. The guys at the top, yeah, they'll be doing testing to see what they can use to replace the halo, which probably will end up being a closed cockpit, I'd imagine, which I think wouldn't really be too bad. I mean, we've seen some renders that look pretty good, actually. The cars look like really aggressive, even with these closed cockpits. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, the halo is coming in. You hate it. Everyone else hates it. I don't want to say I like it. I just want to say I support it. But yeah, I think my views haven't gone down well so far. But I mean, I respect the opinions of other people, and I understand them as well. And I think it's a very interesting period of F1 to see how it's been received and how much negativity it's received. It's quite astonishing, actually, just how much. I mean, even on all the F1 tweets and the F1 videos, it's all just hashtag no halo and all this stuff. So I find it very interesting, but it's coming.
Or rest in peace Formula One or something.
Yeah, which in a way itself is quite sad, because, I mean, you're going to still watch F1 next year, right?
Yeah.
What are you reluctant to?
But I might not like, or I might not enjoy the visuals.
But if, let's say next year we had a three-way fight between Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes, every race a different winner, a mixed up winner after every single event, I mean, wouldn't that overshadow the fact that we have these ugly devices on the top of the car?
I would watch every race in the front wing camera perspective then.
Yeah, actually, that's another good point. I even said that to you, that the main thing that I'm worried about is the view from the onboard cameras, because we've seen them before, and
that view is destroyed.
Yeah, it doesn't look good at all. It looks horrible, and even the camera angles are already a hot topic of debate. There's a lot of people that don't like the I don't even know what it's called, like the camera that's lowered down.
Shoulder cam.
There's a lot of people that don't like that, including me, because you don't really see, you see the driver's line of view, I guess, in a way, but you don't get to see much of the car and how it works. And the T-cam is the really good one, because you get to see the whole front of the car and how it works and everything. And I think when the halo is there, that view is a bit obstructed and you can't really see as well. It kind of just looks in the way, and it takes away your focus. It looks a bit like from the T-cam, I think it looks like a basketball hoop, but
it does. I mean, the only good solution would be to introduce a visor cam. I mean, it's 2017, IndyCar showed that it works, so come on, Formula One, give us a visor cam.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a visor cam before. I remember back in...
Yeah, but that was kind of a crappy version.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a number of years ago. I mean, that was, I think, it was on Ricciardo's car. It was when he was still with Toro Rosso, so it was a few years ago.
It was also on Hülkenberg's car, I think, in Force India 2012, Monaco.
Was it? Yeah. Maybe I just remember on Ricciardo's car, but
11.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in IndyCar, and it looks amazing in IndyCar. You really get to see the driver at work at the steering wheel, and you get to see the car and how much. Yeah, it's much better than the shoulder cam anyway. So maybe I imagine in the future, as F1 progresses, we'll get the visor cam in. But yeah, I think that's probably going to be another hot topic of debate, the how much the view from the halo is obstructing the camera angle.
Yeah, they might even lose some TV broadcasters because of that, who knows. Definitely the halo is no good thing for the popularity of Formula One. I mean, no young kid will point at that Formula One car and with the halo and say, oh, look, that looks really, really like a really cool car. I want to drive something like this. So, yeah.
But I think in contrast to that, I mean, if you're looking to get young kids into F1, if we have it introduced now, I mean, by the time the kids are growing up, they'll grow up with the head protection, and to them it'll be normal. It'll be normal to see on the cars.
I don't know. Well, I think we should leave it at that. As I said, I'm interested in your opinion. Maybe there are more people out there that support the halo.
I doubt it. I haven't seen anyone else yet, so...
so you're the only one.
Possibly.
So you're the one who voted, like, 10 times on that poll I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, maybe.
I think there's still one, I don't know how to call it, like the one council or something that needs to agree on the halo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the World Motorsport Council needs to sort of give it the clearance it needs, but I mean, I don't think that it's going to be denied. I think the biggest aspect of it is the fact that they have a working system, and if a driver was to be killed or injured, that would lead to serious legal issues, so I don't think there's any going back on it now.
Well, then make a contract like where the driver has to sign that he is aware of the risks and he can't be blah 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 blah, you know, and then then the legal stuff should be out of the way. I mean, they know that they are risks out there, and they decided to do that as a living, to face the risks. I mean, yeah, but let's leave it there. I mean, I don't think we can agree on that.
We could ramble on for another hour about this, so, and we wouldn't agree, so.
Yeah, let's go to a bit of more of a positive topic. Robert Kubica might be back for 2018, right?
Well, yeah, you say let's move to a more positive topic. I mean, it's not positive if you're Julian Palmer, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean,
well, maybe he is happy. Maybe he says to himself, "Thank God I don't have to drive without Halo."
I thought we had moved on from the Halo.
Sorry.
But yeah, I mean, Kubica could be coming back. I mean, at first, when he first had that test in Valencia, it was like, oh, okay, you know, he can drive an F1 car. That's pretty cool. But now it's really starting to get fueled up. And the biggest news so far in the story is that he will test next week after the Hungary GP. He'll be testing for Renault, which is huge news.
Yeah, right. I mean, they even said that Robert Kubica is on their list for 2018. And that test really confirms that he is a close contender for that. They want to compare him, and I think it's really possible to do that. For example, with Julian Palmer or with Nico Hülkenberg, they know everything from the test is after the race weekend itself, so they know what lines their drivers take, throttle position, whatever, everything from telemetry, and they can perfectly compare Robert Kubica's data with the data of their drivers. And I mean, from that, I would guess they can conclude whether he is ready and whether he would be a good fit for next season.
Yeah, and I think what's important too is these in-season tests are used a lot by teams to get their young drivers in and give them experience. And I mean,
how old is Kubica? 32,
yeah. And he's probably more experienced in Formula One than the most of the kids that will be driving next week. But of course he's not experienced in the current formula and the current set of rules, so that's really what this test is, to see what he's like in a hybrid car, how we can manage all the elements of a hybrid car, and especially the 2017 cars, which have much more downforce on them. So, I mean, if he's able to... I think a lot of people at this stage are kind of in agreement that it's very, very unlikely that Julian Palmer will retain a seat at Renault for next year. I think he's had, you know, two seasons now to show his worth, and he's underperformed, to say the least. And Renault definitely do want someone new next year to come in and step up to match Hülkenberg at the very least, to get more points for the championship. And if they can see that Kubica can do that, then there's no reason why they shouldn't bring him in. And that's, in my opinion, really, really exciting. And one of the biggest stories of this decade, if he can come back, especially after his accident back in 2011. I don't take sides. I'm neutral, but it would make me so happy if Kubica came back, because I think the way his F1 career ended at that stage wasn't fair on him. It wasn't a reflection of his talent. I mean, even Fernando Alonso labels him as the best driver of this generation. So, yeah, I would really, really like to see him come back.
Yeah, as you said, what a story that would be. I mean, I can remember when I read about the accident of Kubica, and yeah, I mean, it was really sad to read that, because I mean, he was really rumored to go to Ferrari and to go like wherever, becoming the next world champion and so on. And yeah, it was really sad. And It would be really, it would be a great story for Kubica. It would be a great story for Formula One. And yeah, I really hope he can show some good performance in the test. And well, yeah, of course, not the best for Palmer, as you said. But I think Palmer wasn't even their first choice for 2017. I think they tried to get some other driver, multiple other drivers to drive for them this season, but I think they couldn't get them apart from Hülkenberg. So yeah, I think Palmer is really on his way out there.
I think he was Renault's fourth choice. I think Perez, or maybe even fifth choice. I think Perez was the number one driver that Renault wanted for this season. They wanted him over Hülkenberg. And then I think it was, Sainz. Then I think it was Hülkenberg. And then they wanted Magnussen in beside Hülkenberg. And then after that, they went for Palmer. But yeah, I think his time, he's had enough time to show what he can do. He's underperformed, which is a shame for him, I think, because in the junior categories, he looked like a pretty solid driver and a pretty quick driver. But yeah, I think his time is coming to an end in F1. And I think his seat will be given to someone else. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of contenders and a lot of people that will be hoping for that seat. But I mean, I think it would just be such a great story. I mean, I know this is really, really thinking far into the future, and it's unlikely in itself to happen, given the circumstances. But well, Kubica is 32 years of age, so let's say if he comes back into F1, he have maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 years in F1 if he did. Mm-hmm. You know, what if in that time Renault were able to make a race winning car, and even then a championship winning car, and he was able to go win the championship and then retire? I mean, I think that would just be probably the greatest story in Formula One history. Definitely up there with one of the top. I mean, that's thinking very, very far into the future, but it's possible, because we know Renault have much more of a budget than the teams around them that they're competing with, and I think they will eventually return to the top of the sport. But it may not be until, yeah, maybe 2020, 2021. It could be a few years, so we'll wait and see. But yeah, the test next week will be, well, ultimately the deciding factor on whether Kubica will get a 2018 seat or not, because if Renault can see that he's able to cope with all the hybrid management and the downforce levels, and if he's able to steer the car properly with his arm that's half severed really on his forearm, then they'll bring him in, I think, for next season.
Do you know whether Formula One is big in Poland?
I think, I don't think it's major, but for the fans that do know a lot about sport, they know a lot about Kubica, and I think all this rumor mill about Kubica can only be doing good things for Formula One in Poland. So yeah, I think because of him, really, it's somewhat popular.
I'm just thinking whether it could be a selling point for Renault cars there, for example. I don't know whether Poland is a big market for Renault, but yeah, maybe they could sell more cars with Kubica being there, for example.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean
Poland is a growing economy, so you never know.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think Renault could use him as a marketing tool, but in terms of F1, if he has the speed to match that, it's just going to be a bonus.
Yeah, it would be just an add-on. So yeah, would be a great story, as we said. I think we might know more after the test, or a few weeks after that, but we'll keep an eye on it, and I think it's going to be interesting. Silly season is starting to rev up, so next month will be interesting, definitely. So enough about head protection. I hate it. Enough about about Kubica. Let's talk about the upcoming GP, the Hungary GP in Budapest, I think it is. Is it directly in Budapest or is it slightly outside? I think it is.
Yeah, I looked it up. I mean, the teams always say, I'm looking forward to coming to Budapest, but I think it's actually quite far away from Budapest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's like, I'm not sure how far, but it's not close anyway. That race coming up this weekend, and I think it's in the last number of years it's proven to be a fantastic race. I mean, I think 2016 wasn't great, there wasn't too much happening, but certainly
15 was great.
Yeah, and 14, and I mean, it's strange to think that in the hybrid era Mercedes have only won here once, because in 2014 Ricciardo won and 2015 Vettel won. So mm-hmm. And then last year Hamilton won, so that was Mercedes' first ever victory in Hungary. So hopefully we'll have races like 2014 and 2015.
I cannot imagine that, even though it is a high downforce slow corner track, I can't really imagine Red Bull really having the edge over Ferrari and Mercedes, but I do believe that Red Bull will be in the mix with Ferrari and Mercedes. So we might have, for the first time, we might have the case that, as you said earlier, we do have three teams fighting for a win, and that could be great to watch. Like six cars, well, let's hope they are six cars fighting for the first six positions, like being really close together, like strategy making the difference, some great overtakes making the difference. That would be a really cool race to watch, and well, we just have to hope that they are able to overtake on that circuit with those high downforce levels, because that could be a major issue as well. When they can't follow through the infield and the last sector, there's no way to get pass on that tiny straight.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically it probably not a great track for overtaking, especially with these new cars that are hard to follow the cars in front. So it's probably not going to be the best race for overtaking, but we'll see. And hopefully we'll have six teams fighting for the six teams. I would love it if we had six teams.
So you count McLaren in then, because it's a high downforce track.
Yeah, and Nestro Force India and I don't know, Toro Rosso in there too. It should suit Red Bull more so than most tracks on the calendar. Let's hope it does. I mean, they won here before back in 2014. Ricciardo won. And actually, thinking back to that race, Ferrari almost won that race with Fernando Alonso.
That was a great overtake of Ricciardo into turn one, right? Well,
yeah, Alonso was leading the race and Ricciardo was on a different strategy. And then in the last couple of laps, I don't think Alonso is in a great position to win the race this time. But hopefully we'll have three teams up there, six drivers fighting it out, and it could be a great race. But overtaking could be an issue because the track is so tight. I mean, in years gone by it's been called Monaco without the barriers because it's just so narrow and mm-hmm. you don't really get much side-by-side action, and any overtaking opportunities really will, the only overtaking opportunity really is down into the first corner, or maybe the second corner too, but we'll see on that one. But here's hoping that we're gonna have a great weekend and six drivers in the mix.
So in other episodes we talked about all the teams and like who's going to do well and who isn't, and the midfield teams and blah blah. I think we should just go to the podium predictions and maybe explain why you think those cars will be on the podium.
Yeah, sure. So do you want me to go first?
Yeah, because I have to think about it. I've got no idea so far.
I mean, like most races this year, it's been a bit hard to predict. But I'm going to say probably, I mean, yeah, I think the man in form right now is Valtteri Bottas. I mean, Hamilton has had a good run so far, but I think Bottas has really been gaining confidence. He had a bit of a setback at Silverstone because of the grid penalty, but I think he's on a really, really good run right now, and I'm going to put him in to win the race. So which would be very interesting going into the summer break. I'm going to go for Bottas to win. Vettel second and Hamilton third. Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay, I think I'll go. I mean, from the races we had so far, I think it was clear to see that the traction of the Mercedes out of slow corners isn't the best. So I don't think they will win in Hungary because of that. I mean, of course, we don't know what kind of updates the teams will bring, but okay, let's go for a Ferrari win with Sebastian Vettel, because Vettel is normally, he's pretty good at Hungary from my memories. Well, of course, I can remember 2014 when he went onto the curb in the last turn. Can you remember?
Oh yeah, and he just missed the barrier.
And he just missed it. That was great car control. It just came to my mind. So yeah, I go for Vettel in P1. Then a bit of a crazy choice, I go for Max Verstappen in P2.
Yeah.
And then I'd say Hamilton will beat Bottas, as well. I think he had the pace in Silverstone already, and of course it was a great race by Bottas, as you said, but I think he has the edge, slight edge, 1 or 2 tenths maybe. So yeah, I would go for Hamilton, and behind that, all the other cars.
Yeah, I think it's a very bold prediction to put Verstappen on the podium. I think Red Bull do have a great chance of getting a podium this weekend. What I do think, though, is that we put way too much thought into these predictions, because it's F1. We anything can happen. We don't know. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe next time I'll say, Palmer will win the race, something, and Van Doorn will come second. I don't know, because it's just that unpredictable.
I don't quite think.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean.
Well, maybe Honda introduces engine number 4 and they add 100 horsepower or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, in their dreams, maybe, but I don't think it will happen.
Well, isn't the motto of Honda Power of Dreams?
Yeah, it is.
It is. So there you go.
Who knows? But actually, one thing. We haven't talked about the divorce of McLaren and Honda for a few episodes. I mean, I don't want to talk much about it now, as the episode is nearly over. But we heard so many voices like, oh, it's clear and it's absolutely no-brainer. Honda will divorce, or no, other way around. McLaren will divorce Honda, and surely they will go to another supplier. But over the past few weeks, I thought, like, we heard less of that. I mean, do you still think they are on their way for a new supplier, or do you think the chance of them staying with Honda became a bit bigger?
Yeah, I've changed my mind. I mean, pretty much the start of the season and the first few races, I was like, yeah, McLaren won't be with Honda for next year. But I think something changed over the Austrian Grand Prix weekend when they introduced that big update. And since then, really, all talk of a divorce has died down. And in my opinion, I think they're going to stick together for another year. But I mean, I know Fernando Alonso said that he wanted McLaren Honda to be winning races by September. I mean, September is coming close and they're nowhere near to winning a race, and no one ever expected them to anyway. But I don't think a divorce will happen, and I reckon that they'll continue their partnership And yeah, Honda will hopefully just come back stronger next year. I mean, it can't get any worse. They're only going to get improved the whole time. So yeah, I think they're going to stick together for next year.
Yeah, if I had to bet on it, I would also say that they will probably stay with Honda, just because they signed already their whole 2018 back of the car around the Honda engine. So I don't think it would be a wise decision to really change engine suppliers on a short notice. But yeah, we'll see about that. We'll see about Kubica, of course. And yeah, as I said at the beginning, let us know about your opinion about the Halo system. Will be interesting to read those comments. And other than that, I'll just say goodbye and see you next time.
Goodbye.